I would like to tell you a story about my life in relationship to what that word is on the board that I've got, T-I-M-E. I'm going to be talking about time this morning, as I put a thought on the board. When I was growing up as a young boy, I had many health problems, as one might imagine. One of my fears in life was going into the surgeon's house or the surgeon's room in Macquarie Street. Because the normal doctor I had, MD, whatever, he provided all the essential things, cold, flu, all that sort of stuff. But when you went into the surgeon's office, orthopaedic surgeon, that spelt disaster because you did not know what was going to happen. How was I going to end up? Me, the way I am now. This was a year, every 6 months I had to go in with my parents and have a half-hour consultation. And he would put me up in Macquarie Street, in the doctor's houses, rooms up the top end of Sydney in Macquarie Street. And he would sit me up in a bench in the window, about 15 to 16 stories up. And this overlooked the Macquarie Street houses government. I'd be terrified because I'd have to be me knee up and me legs and me arms and all this sort of thing. What was going to happen? And he'd poke and he'd prod and he'd say things and he'd talk to my parents and he'd say this, that and the other. Over the years I found that I wasn't going to die as a young boy as I thought I was going to do. I was going to live. I had some help. Yes, I had some help. But one of the things I remember one day was this. He told my parents that I would have to go into a leg iron. A leg iron. Now, that leg iron is, for one of those who don't know, is a piece of iron that's strapped around my leg to support my lower leg from the leg through to the foot because I couldn't walk properly. I had a crook foot. And the doctor said to me, my parents one day, if your boy had to walk on his hands, he'd be all right. He'd be normal because he'd get strengthened. But because I'm the way I am, I had to have a leg iron. Oh, woe is me. I had to have a leg iron fitted up and I didn't know what was going to happen. One day, a few weeks later, my parents said to me one morning, you're going to have the day off from school. Oh, this is good. Day off from school. Beauty. Oh, but we've got to go into the children's hospital in Camperdown. Oh, that's a bit different. What's going to happen there? The doctor's going to fit you a leg iron. He's going to fit a leg iron to your leg. After the boot was made, because you had to have special boots in those days, you had to have a boot made, especially because you couldn't wear the shoes. And this leg iron fitted into the sole of the shoe and came up to the leg. So, with trepidation, we got on the 459 bus one morning and went to the children's hospital in Camperdown and got off. Little me was tagging along behind, very intrepid. And I remember going into this room and the orthopaedic doctor and his mate, the surgeon, was there, because he operated in the same hospital, was there, and they had this iron for me to fit. I'm only a boy of about five, six. This was an interesting time in my life. Because when I stood up after they put the leg iron on, guess what happened? I couldn't walk. It was like putting a clamp. It was like putting a clamp on my leg because I didn't know how to move. And the man came in. Now he said, move it backwards and forwards. I remember this. Move it backwards and forwards a little bit. And walk up here and back there. And after about 10 minutes, I felt a bit better about myself. Very good. This is about lunchtime. And my father was a wise man. He said to me, let's go to lunch. Where are we going to go to lunch? Not here in the hospital, after I'd had my leg on, iron on. And he said to me, "We're going to get on the bus." We all did. I got on the bus all right. And it was a double-decker bus in those days. And I got into the lower deck. And I sat down just inside the door. I was right. Got into town. I was feeling very good. Then we went to lunch. And in those days, a lot of the places were done out in the Art Deco style. Art Deco in the 50s and 60s, you know what I mean, with servies and cutleries and everything, was all Art Deco. And this particular place, in the main street of Sydney, George Street, or just off it, yes, George Street, Georgian Market, the cafeteria was down the stairs. Well, I got down the stairs all right, dirty, no worries at all. Got down there, no problems at all. Nothing was wrong. Had lunch, and the cafeterias in those days, you pushed a tray from about here to the front gate, here, out there, before you got anything near to get served, and then you walked down the aisle, you paid the lady at the end. You found a table, and off you went. Had your lunch. Well, that was nice. I was in short pants. Yes, I've said this one before. But lunch was over. I had to get up those stairs. It was about 30 stairs. Up, straight up, up, across, and then up again. Up, or something like that. And going down was all right, coming down, because the pressure was off my leg. But going up was a different attitude, because I had to go up the stairs and lift my leg. And as I lifted my leg, it cut the back of my knee. And I was in agony. I managed to get up the top of the stairs while the rail, crawled up the rail with my father behind me and my mother in front of me. When I get up to the top of the stairs, I'd noticed two things. People were giving me a wide berth coming down. They would see what I was on. And they'd go past me. That was all right. My dignity was hurt. Dignity. Me. Six. You know what I mean? Was hurt. When I got up to stop, I turned to my father and said, "Dad, I want a pair of long pants. I want to wear a pair of long pants, Dad. Why do you want to wear a pair of long pants?" This is in the middle of Market Street, up past 1 in the afternoon. "Why do you want a pair of long pants, son?" "So I can hide my leg. So nobody can see how I look." Jesus knew what I looked like. Wise man said to me, "Oh, you're not going to have long pants. Think of this. What just happened back there? If you had long pants on and you were trying to get up those 30-odd steps, you would not get up the steps with people coming down the steps, because they walk practically into you. They would walk around me with short pants." And they did. They walked around me with short pants. Now, from the age of 6 to the age of 13, I was in the iron for about 18 months. I never got a pair of long pants. I always had short pants. That day, my father, earthly father, taught me a valuable lesson in life. Time is sometimes needed to heal the problem that I had, with the concept in my mind that I had an observation that I wanted to cover myself up because of the way I looked. Because of the way I looked, I thought I was different. I want to hide, put a coat on, hide my afflictions and all that sort of thing. And so I didn't. And I appreciate and praise the Lord today that my father, earthly father, and my mother helped me get through a difficult time as a little 6-year-old boy. Now, later on, when I finish this, there's something on the back of that. I always did double-sided. Not yet. I always do a double-sided board. But I want to talk about something today. In Ephesians 12, which is very, very interesting. Because in Ephesians 12, the promise and the concept of Ephesians 12 today is time is the currency of our lives. What we do with our time determines the ultimate value of our life to God, to self, and to others. And so today I want to ask myself this question. Am I good to anyone? Do I do any good for around the community? Do I do the right thing by everybody? And so I need look no further than the book of Solomon, Ecclesiastes, and I read some verses in verse 12 which make me think somewhat. And so, I'll start by reading, remember your Creator in the days of your youth. And I'm going to read the whole chapter and deal with it as we go through. Remember your Creator in the days of your youth, before the days of trouble come and the years approach when you will say, I find no pleasure in me. Comment. I'll comment on each verse. Chapter 12, 2-5 is a graphic description of man's progressive deterioration and analogy of aging from birth to death. If you like, it is four seasons. If I can turn the, I'll get up. I'll turn the board. I think I've got this right. I hope this is going to work. Have I got it right? Oh, there's a miracle. In the study that I've done, which was done about seven, eight years ago in the Sabbath school, life was defined this way. Remember your Creator. The four seasons. Now, I'm not talking about Vivaldi's four seasons or anything like that. I am talking about something else. And by the way, I should read something from Webster's Dictionary. Got it here somewhere. Let me see what I think. It talks about time. Time is a measure of duration, a particular part or point of duration, an occasion, a season in present life, leisure, a rhythm, a rate of movement at the time of time. To adapt to the time of occasion, to regulate or measure of time. And that's what time, in that Webster's Dictionary says. Now we all know about the time and half times and all that sort of thing, but that's what it says in there. So this morning I want to talk about four seasons, not Vivaldi's four seasons. But as I look through this particular chapter today, I see things. And I start to think of myself. Remember your Creator in the days of your youth, before the days of trouble come. It is an interesting text because it deals with the trouble and the years approach when you will find, I will find no pleasure in it. If I come down to the winter, I'm going to not talk about the next word, I'm going to talk about the silver grey hair, which we all have. Sorry. Anyone that's got silver grey, yeah, I've got something too. I find now at my time of life that I find things harder to do. I have to mow my lawns twice. Once in the front one day, and I have to do the back the next day because physically I can't cope. I'm an aging process. When I come back another time, someone said to me, I'd like to come back as a pharmacist. Why? Because they make that much money from drugs and things, they'd be a rich man. You know what I mean. But that's the way it is. But I am lucky to say, with the help of being old, not quite in the winter, I'm late autumn, early winter, I'll look at it that way, that I am able to still do things with my voice, and talk and sit here to to deliver a presentation here this morning. And I want to just say a few words about what we're going to be reading through here this morning. Sometimes in life one sees problems. When I was a boy, I was taken into the Repat Hospital in Concord. "What's war, Dad?" "Oh, war's a funny thing." "Oh, yeah, all that stuff." "What about these people that are up in the repatriation hospital?" "I don't believe you." One Saturday night, Dad, my father, walked me down the street, because we only lived down the end of the street from the Repat Hospital in Concord, and he showed me, took me up into a ward. Son, he said, this is the result of war. What I saw in those beds that night changed my mind forever. But what I didn't know, he didn't show me the real bad ones. They were up two floors or higher. I only saw the mild one. Sometimes in life, we need to be given a jolt. I find no pleasure in them. If we move on now to verse 2, "Before the sun is light and the moon and the stars grow dark and the clouds return after rain." Alright, that's a direct reference to the sun and the light and the rain and them being darkened, as we all know. Verse 3 is something a bit different. "When the keepers of the house tremble and the strong men stoop, when the grinders cease because they are few, and those looking through the windows grow dim. That's verse 3. Verse 3 talks about, in my Bible here, the keepers of the house. This and other metaphors may refer to the parts of the body, hands, legs, etc., but the imagery should be pressed on the extent that destroys the poetry which moves freely between the figures, such as darkness, storm, a house in decline, and desert world in the light. It talks about the grinders. Now I've got a little book here somewhere. It talks about the grinders and what the grinders in the old days did. I've got it here. Let me find it. Grinders are looking through the window. Grinders in the original sense are the women who prepared the grinding for cooking and baking. The reference here may be about the teeth. Looking through the windows refers to the tradition of the women not appearing in public very much. These women would often peek through their lattice windows. This all may be a reference to old age when vision becomes less clear. Well, That's very nice of me to read that, because I can't see hardly a thing. My vision is getting less clear. Now, there are some people that have to have glasses right from the early age. That's just a generic, probably, that's something that comes up in the family traits. That's life. I once had a niece that said to me, she said, "I look ugly with glasses." I said, "I like little girls with glasses. They're nice." She's quite happy now. She wears glasses. That's life. This is the problem. We find these things. We find that Solomon, in saying things, he presented himself in a way in which shows people that he was very, very interested in what was going on at the time. If we look back at Solomon's life, and I read, that Solomon is an old king, approaches his death, haunted by his past. When first on the throne, he had asked for wisdom. He was granted that and much more. But looking back over his life in an effort to pass on what he had learned to his successor, Solomon finds his journey ridiculed with contradiction. Now, if I analyse that statement, our lives are a life of problems. We have lives in which we do not sit in secluded safety. We go out into the streets and we go about our daily business. That's the way we are supposed to. We are taught things, that we go out and do things for Jesus and God and live generally. If, as in Ecclesiastes 11, it talks about the farmers having to go out into the fields, at odd hours of the days and the nights to sow crops. Sow your seed in the morning and the evening, and let not your hands be idle. In other words, what Solomon is saying here, even though I am this way or that, go out into the world. Go out no matter what. If I go back to this board, and I look at the spring, the child is for learning. This is when a child learns about what's right, what's wrong, and if he's brought up in a Seventh-day Adventist house, as I was, he'll be taken to Sabbath school. He'll be taken into the Sabbath, the kindergarten, or whatever you call it these days, the little classes, and learn about Jesus Christ, and have the sing songs, and learn all about that. Learning as a child was something that I had to do. I remember taking home another fear I had when I was a child, was fear of getting the report from school and have to take it home and present it to the parents. Yes. When you got, you know, you got 30 for this and you got 50 for that, and some people had 90s and 99s, but I only got about 54, something like that. That was me. I knew people at my school that they wouldn't study at all. This is primary school. They wouldn't study for an exam at all. And they get 80 or 90%. If I knew I was going to get an exam in 3 months, I could start studying 3 months and I'd end up with nothing, 41, 42. That's all I'd get. That was just me. But don't ask me anything about algebra, because that to me is still a mystery today. I find no pleasure. I find no pleasure. So as I go through the age, I get the learning as a child. I better move on now to summer. And I put youth, because that's what it says in my study. And the youth, it talks about sorting things out. Alright, that's the best way I can think about it. Sorting things out. So your social stigmas, your social position in school, as adults, in children, the way you walked around with your young people, how you got on, your position in life. Because be it or not, in schools there's a class system. In other words, I'm better than you, you're better than me, and you're the bottom of the class and no one will talk to you and all that sort of stuff. That's the way it is. It's interesting. Youth, sorting things out, sorting things through life. When you're a youth, you try to get to the age of 21, quick. After you get to the age of 21, you don't worry. Life has come sort of, after you're 22 years old, you generally get on the downhill racer. Now, I put autumn next. This is an interesting one, because my Bible talks to me about autumn, the middle age, knowledge. By the time you get to middle age, most of us around here have got some sort of degrees. Hanging up in the surgery or hanging up on the wall at home, teachers, and the knowledge has increased. So is your wealth. So is your agility to move around quite quickly. Now, just out of interest's sake, a lot of nighttime coach drivers, and I mean the fast ones, I'm not talking about railways, coach drivers that have to drive these express buses, coaches, between Sydney and Melbourne, are only good for that job between the ages of about 25 to about 33, 34. That is considered generally when their reactions in an emergency are at their quickest. That has been proven over the years here in Australia with the number of bus accidents that have been involved, particularly in New South Wales. I can think of two at the moment. That is basically nighttime driving I'm talking about now, nighttime. After the age of about 42, 43, your reflexes tend to slow down. And they've had to take those gentlemen, and some late ladies now, off those nighttime runs to put them on lesser runs, i.e. all stations or all stops to Grafton or something like that, because their reaction time is not as good. Because things happen in a split second. It's interesting to note, I'm looking at a verse here today, as I look here, when the grinders cease because they are few. It talks about that in verse 3. When the doors, verse 4 reads this. When the doors to the streets are closed and the sound of grinding fades. Interesting thought. Ever had a record go off and you can't hear it quite right? Or DVD, what am I talking about? You know, thingy. Because you haven't got the sound right. Or the volume of the television goes up and down because the sound is different. These things take time. That's today. When men rise up at the sound of the bird, but their songs grow faint. This talks about, in the Bible, when men's and ladies' voices might get a bit old and get a little bit cracked and not able to talk about things as they want. When men are afraid of heights and dangers in the streets, when the almond tree blossoms and the grasshopper drags itself along and desires no longer is stirred, then man goes to his eternal home and mourns going about the streets. Interesting thought here. It talks about the almond tree. 12:5, the almond tree. The almond tree is pale in blossom and possibly suggests a white hair of age. A grasshopper, normally agile but slow in movements on a cold morning, recall the stiffness of old age. An eternal home, and in context probably points simply to the grave, but not beyond it. How long does it take me or you to get up in the morning on these cold mornings? You get out of bed, you've got to stretch the leg and, scratch around for a bit and feel, yeah, I'm right, I'm here. Or I open my eyes, see how I'm going. Now, I know this is a bit flippant, but I've already seen my death notice because I've got it in the drawer at home. A few years ago, I was walking down the street and someone said to me, I'm glad to see you're here. I thought you were dead. Your name was in the paper this morning. I've got it at home. And not many people can say that, but I've got one. I can go home and get it now. I'll show it to you. Ronald Keith Burnett died on a certain date at 60. And there's so forth, and again, so he lived in Melbourne. Ronald Keith Burnett. Now, it's interesting that second name, that's the name of my brother. But people here thought I was dead. But that's the way it goes. Grasshoppers. Ever seen a grasshopper in the morning? Or a fly or something going around slowly? Trying to warm up? Interesting thought. Where do we go from there? Remember in verse 6, him before the silver cord is severed, or the golden bowl is broken, before the pitcher is shattered of the spring. Or the wheel is broken at the well. Remember him before the silver cord is severed. If I have a light with a long fitting on it, with a cord, not a rope, and one of those little fixtures breaks, the remainder of that light is going to fall. And the thought is brought out here in verse 6. The silver cord, a golden bowl. A hanging lamp suspended by the silver chain, if only one link snaps, this light and beauty will perish, suggesting how fragile life is. Isn't life like that? One day last week, I was going down to I'm helping out on a farm down here, Rangshan, and a man passed us in a truck, doing about 110. And he forced us off the road because of his stupidity. He was out on the wrong side of the road. A vehicle was coming the opposite way and he was on double yellow line. And all of a sudden, this truck just started to move in, cut in. And we in our vehicle, had to pull to one side, off the side, to let him in, endangering us. Life is but a thread. Our Dr. Peter Tong will know about all that. Life is a thread. I value life. But how fast life can be taken away from us when we least expect it. For we have to go out and we have to do things in life, and I don't know whether I'm going to go home tonight or sleep in my bed or go out tomorrow or be here next week or do whatever. I'm living in a time right now. Right now. My time is now. What I did yesterday and what I did the day before, that is in the past. I have to look forward to the future. To look forward to the future, I have to remember my past, but I want to look forward to what's ahead of me. Sure, I know that we're all going to pass away at a certain time. That's life. We've all deal with that. That's life. That's the way it goes. But remember him before the silver cord is. I won't go anymore. I'll stop there now and then. And goes on. And the wheel is broken. When a member of a young family loses someone in a swimming pool accident, as it happened here a few years ago, when the person was only 6 months, 7 months old, or maybe 12 months, loses in a swimming pool accident, drowns, life was shattered for that family at that time. Today, they've got over it. The grave is out here in Hamilton. There are toys on it and all that sort of thing. But they still remember. The family was shattered at the time. But they've been able to pull together and realise. Now they are advocates for people to make sure that they've got fences around their swimming pool. Life is so fragile. You don't know. We have to be very careful. Life can be also, as it says in verse, where am I up to? 7? 8. Meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher. Everything is meaningless. Interesting, in my Bible it says that, meaningless. Such is life, under the sun, for the earth apart from God, ending is in brokenness. But with a relationship to our Creator already demanded, and with the facts of his judgment affirmed, meaning that we have an ability to know that we have a God up there that wants us, if we are willing. Meaningless, meaningless. When I look out at life in the general, and I look around and I see people around there in the world, life is meaningless to a lot of people. We have hope. We have, or songs just come to my mind. We have this hope, this blessed hope. Other people out there can't say that because they haven't got it. We have a blessed hope. But everything we see sometimes, or we see or read in the paper, is meaningless. And your Bible might say another word. But this was the thought that was out here today. If we are children, we are more optimistic and open-minded. We have more time to practice making good choices. It saves us from making a lot of painful mistakes. Children do not blame God for human tragedy. Even as children, by beholding, they become as charged. Let me ask this another question at this time. I'll just put that down here. Stay. Much of our meaning and purpose in life depends on our perception of reality. Compare how Christians and non-Christians might perceive a natural disaster. All right, I'll deal with one in Oklahoma City, the suburb, just this last week. How did you deal with that when you saw it, when you heard about it? We appalled, yes, naturally you're going to feel appalled and see the pictures and the images in the paper. We're going to be appalled. But there were people I read in the time of desperation over there that after that 320-kilometre wind were walking around pilfering things from people's homes while they might have laid passed away or died in the storm. Pilfery. We have a hope to see that natural disasters in this country are they're not too frequent. But when they come, they're pretty severe. How do you perceive a natural disaster? A non-Christian. Oh yeah, just another thing. The waves came in or something, the tsunami came in, and it happened. What was it about? It was about the atmosphere, a time, all right. So thinking about that storm that came up from the Gulf, that was all timing up in the atmosphere. The two storms came together, the hot air, the cold air, all mixed up, caused that a big up in the air and came down over Oklahoma, over the town. Timing was everything. Look at the storm. Timing. One's only got to see coming out of Melbourne sometimes. The black skies up over Ingleston Bank. Or up Ingleston Hill there. Up the hill out of Melbourne. In the distance. Timing is everything. It's interesting because timing is everything. That's very, very good. But we have this hope, and I'm going to turn over to this now. Without God, life makes no, I'm going to finish off. Without God, life makes no sense. Can be read two ways. We all face death. Death is always there. If no God exists, life makes no sense. With our Lord Jesus, Jesus is our victory. Without Jesus, you can do nothing. John 15:5 reads this, I am the vine, you are the branches. If a man remains in me and I in him, he will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. Death is always there, waiting to swallow us up into, as some people call it, oblivion. Now, I'll go back to this now. That's just a little byproduct. I want to come now to the conclusion of the matter. Because the conclusion of the matter, and it's only just about three or four verses, I won't be here long, talks about not only was the teacher wise, but he also impaired knowledge to the people. And he pondered and searched out many proverbs. The teacher searched to find just the right words, and he wrote. What he wrote was upright and true. One can see Jesus' life as that he wrote, and he said things that were upright and true. He showed things that were necessary. Given by one shepherd is verse 9 is pondered and searched. The rigorous process of a man's side with no pain spared in seeking truth and comprehension. I once had a headmaster to study that much, he turned himself blind. Dr. Turner. But that man had a gift that I can remember to this day. As a boy, I was in Concord Church one day, and he took a sermon on the prodigal son. Blind, but he took it from the other side. Not the prodigal son. He took about the son and the pig. He put it in reverse. He didn't open a Bible. It was shut. I could see it. It was shut there. And everything came out of the heart. Are we like that today? Can we do that? I have to read the words of the Bible. I have wanted to search out in many proverbs. The teacher searched to find just the right words for what he wrote and was upright and true. The words of the wise, verse 11, and I'll finish with this. The words of the wise are like goads. They're collected sayings like firmly embedded nails. Even by one shepherd, talks about nails there. In my study, it tells me that's a direct reference to suffering of Jesus and what he had with the nails in his hand. Of making many books, there are no end. Much study wearies the body. Yes. Now it's interesting here, be warned, my son, of anything in addition to them. In other words, this is a reference to what is it, Revelation 22:14, where he's actually saying, if anything is added to the Bible or taken away from this in here in Ecclesiastes, or you want to change things around, you will forever pay the price. Of making many books, there is no end, and much study wearies the body. Now I'll close off. Verse 13 and 14 reads this. I'll read the study first. Fear God. Loving reverence is the foundation of wisdom. Yes. And it gives the texts in Psalms and Proverbs and so forth, as well as the context through Job, and is a goal and a conclusion. The whole duty of man here is a fulfillment of all, a far cry from the meaningless. Where everything I learn today, from my parents to when I was finished off, to me is now not meaningless. It's how I perceive it. And so I want to be able to say today, thank you, Lord, for giving me a chance of being and reading Ecclesiastes like Solomon did, and making a thought, and making us understand. For God will bring every deed into judgment, including every hidden thing, wherever it is good or evil. Verse 13 reads, fear God, I'll read it all. Now it has been heard. Here is the conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep his commands. This is the whole duty of man. I have to obey all the commandments. I can't buy 1, 4, 5 and 9. That doesn't get me anywhere. Putting that into context today, laws are made for the benefit of man. Whether they're right or whether they're wrong, I'm not going to go down that path. It doesn't take much for me to step over the law and be pulled up. The other morning, outside my place, for about 6 hours, the police were there, doing road checks, tyre checks, all that sort of stuff. 4 cars, plus one pursuit vehicle sitting in the middle if anyone had to go off. In that 6 hours, outside my place, they got 35 vehicles. Everyone had a blow in the bag and they had a tyre thing. 35. The perception was, can I get away with it? Are people driving around in vehicles that shouldn't be on the road today? Or let me put it this way, then I'm going to finish. Are we as Christians going around the society today with our blinkers on, not realising what we are doing? I would like to close with this. Yes, it's an old one, but it's good. Childhood is a time to share unconditional love. Youth, a time of energy, courage and willingness to try new activities, yes. Young adults have the time and energy and fresh ideas to enrich the church's current progress, yes. I agree. 4. The prime of life includes more money than time. New members may have the means to support the church financial needs and provide encouragement and emotional support to other members. Yes. 5. The mature member or person may now have time and the money available to support the church and its energy to be engaged in spring cleanups or remodeling projects. Been there. The retirement years in life should be full of words of wisdom, like me. I've just had a friend that's just retired from a car dealership in here in life, and he doesn't know how he worked for 30-odd years going to work every day. Because he's retired now, and he's loving it. We have to challenge ourselves as members of society today and members of our human family, brothers and sisters, to be able to think clearly, to see what's around the corner, to understand what it means to be a Christian. Because if we don't keep our eyes open and we fall asleep, pardon the expression, over the Bible, we will not get the benefit of what the Bible is talking about. Because if we go to sleep, we don't see things. Slumber. It's interesting, a thought I've just come to mind. Well, I often see signs now. Wake up, drowsy driver, or die. So I conclude this thought this morning with this thought. Human strength is a weakness. Human wisdom is a folly. Our success does not depend on our talents or learning, but on our living connection with God. And so today I want to close this good book with that thought, but on the living connection with God. Therefore I say to you today, have you got a living connection with your God? A living connection that is alive, fostered and well through prayer, through your activity, through your daily association with one and another here, in any churches, or outside in the world? We are seen as Adventists. Do we show it? Yes. By our actions and deeds ye shall be known. Kindness. A kind word turns a lot of people, makes them happy. A sad word or a rude word can upset someone for life. How we react is up to each one of us. But on living our life, with a connection with God is my aim for my life, and I pray today that it is yours today.